Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Wings for Breakfast, our twice-weekly Red Wings podcast here on The Athletic, presented by BetMGM. I'm Max Boldman. With me, as always, is Prashant Iyer. And it's kind of like a little, mid-season nice check-in here, late-season check-in here. 10 games remaining in the season. The Red Wings about to get into a four-game series with the Dallas Stars. We're beyond the trade deadline. Joe Valeno's on the taxi squad. It's kind of a lot starting to bubble up here as we get into the final 3 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, I think it's finally some of the things that people were hoping to see this year with some of the younger guys like Valeno with the SHL season over for him, being able to come back over and, you know, potentially get into an NHL game in the near future. And then, you know, the Wings had a nice little three-game win streak that unfortunately came to a close there against Chicago, but ultimately, you're starting to see kind of those, you know, signs of progress that I think everyone was hoping to get out of this season. So as you hit the final 10 games here, a lot of excitement, I think, still around the team.
We are yet again, as has become habit, recording 3 hours before a game starts. And so we are going to break out of that eventually. But it was just the way that all the newsy topics fell that it was just the only way that made sense this week for us to do this. We'll be back. Our next episode will be Wednesday night. So that one, hopefully, will have a little bit longer shelf life. We're talking about actual hockey. We won't belabor it too much. Other than to kind of wrap up the Red Wings' most recent four-game stretch. They were on a little three-game win streak for a minute there that I think certainly took me by surprise. I don't know what you thought about it, but it comes crashing down in a 4-0 loss to the Blackhawks over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the three-game win streak was certainly surprising, most notably because they beat Carolina twice, and I think that was maybe a pretty unexpected outcome, at least when you compare how the two teams have played over the course of the season. But then being able to beat Chicago that first time, obviously, it all comes crashing back down. I think that was the kind of dud game that has unfortunately been mixed into some of the highs and lows for the season. Those have been kind of a classic example of the lows where it's pretty clear early on the Wings don't have it and they're not going to find that extra gear. I thought it was a relatively easy night for Malcolm Subban. It was a relatively easy night for me as I fell asleep halfway through the game and had to rewatch it later. So, you know, everything did come crashing back down. But, you know, as it stands, we're 10 games away. And, you know, Max, I was thinking about where you and I had projected this team to be, you know, at the beginning of the season. They're on pace to better both of our predictions, assuming they can do better than 3-6-1 the rest of the way.
I don't know if they can do better than 3-6-1 the rest of the way.
That's the fun part, right? If they go exactly 3-6-1, they end up 19-30-7, which was when I went and looked back, that was the record I had for them.
You what had them with about 20.
I think you had 21 wins. I don't remember the number of losses, but you had them with four more points than I did.
I had them at 47 points. I just wasn't sure how they got there in my accounting for. I did take I forget who I told. I told someone else that they would win 19 games. So I need a little more consistency in my preseason predictions. But I stand by the one I put in print. I just want to make sure everyone knows I stand by the one I put in print. That one.
Do you stand by the other predictions that were accompanying that?
I was just about to say that one is going to be my closest to being right, even if I'm wrong by two or three wins in the end of it.
I mean, it's better than the Thomas Grace one. So.
There's so many. Dude, every one of those is going to be wrong. Every one of them.
But, like, I'm right there with you, so I think that should be stated. And not only are we both going to be very, very, like, not only are all the predictions wrong, they're atrociously wrong. Like, not even in the ballpark of close. I mean, we had Thomas Grace taken over as the main goaltender, and how people kind of shutter their eyes when he's taking over the net. So, oh man, what a year.
Well, it's so funny because it's like we got every way that they were going to get to this record wrong, but then we got the record right about right.
Yeah, basically we looked at a lot of different things, you know, Anthony Mantha bounce back season from a goal scoring standpoint, Thomas Grice taking over in the net, but we still both said they were going to end up being about 45 to 47
players,
points.
Vladislav Domestnikov, or fan favorite Vladislav Domestnikov. Troy Stetcher was right there. Breakout defenseman John Merrill. Troy Stetcher was right there. Although I still think John Merrill had a great year, but I just thought it was going to be at both ends of the ice. Like I predicted a career scoring year for him. And in hindsight, predicting a career scoring year for anyone on the 2021 Red Wings was signing my own death certificate before the games even started.
Yeah, I mean, I did at least appreciate you calling attention to the fact that they are scoring better than last season. You know, this year they're 2.22 goals per game.
Still last.
And still dead last. Asking for a career scoring season, albeit I think Merrill's career high was like 14 points.
It was not unreasonable. That's the thing. I was predicting him to have like 16 points, and I realized it was a higher rate. But when I made that prediction, he was quarterbacking like power play two. Like it just felt plausible.
It you know, for a guy that just had not, I mean, his career high was 15 points in 2018, 2019. So you were just asking him to be better than that. And no, we didn't,
with power
get there.
Play
he got
time.
To five. Right. He got to 5 points. So he got a third of the way there, I guess.
He was good though. So I'm just going to kind of pretend, like I said, John Merrill will be good. And then I got it right.
Yeah. So basically the moral of the story is you and I know how to pick defensemen, as I think I said Stetcher and you said Merrill, but we can't really do anything else.
That's right. That's right. And that would make us kind of different based on some of your recent prognosticating than NHL teams, knowing how to pick defensemen.
Yeah, I mean, at least looking at the draft, and we'll certainly talk about the draft with Bob McKenzie's top 100 coming out on this lovely Monday. I mean, NHL teams certainly haven't been able to reliably pick defensemen at the top of the draft as compared to forwards. So maybe, Max, you and I just need to take over the scouting staff for these guys.
Well, I did just get a goalie prediction wrong. So I think that fits in nicely into your narrative, too, about predicting goalies.
Yeah. I mean, no one can predict goalies. So I think we fit right in.
There we go. I mean, OK, you already brought up the Bob McKenzie list. We're going to get there anyway. Let's just go there right now. It is obviously kind of a always a really good checkpoint because he does the polls where he averages what scouts around the league think of players. And what it really is a really good rough approximation for more so than how kind of the public community ranks these players, which I think we get a pretty good grasp for throughout the year. But it's a snapshot into how some in the NHL community rank these players. And it usually comes out pretty close to the ranges that most of these players get picked in.
Yeah, I mean, McKenzie is very much spot on. I've taken actually an interest in evaluating just how spot on he tends to be. If you go and look at his prognostication for 2015 to 2019, you take his final rankings and match them up to where the players actually were drafted for first round picks. His mean error that he makes is about five picks. So he's usually plus or minus five for a player that he puts in the first round, which is absolutely insane, including some years where he gets nearly the entire top 10. You know, so it's just incredible to see how well connected he is when he goes to put together that list and is able to demonstrate, you know, just his proficiency with this prognostication. I mean, if you go back and look at last season, his biggest miss in the top 15 was Cole Perfetti, who he had at 5, and I believe Perfetti ended up going at 10. And so that was ultimately the biggest miss he had in the top 15. Otherwise, he was spot on with Lafreniere. He was, you know, a couple spots off on the rest of the guys in the top 10 there. You know, Askarov, he called on the money. Lundell, he called on the money. So this list matters when you're trying to evaluate who's going to be available around what kind of draft slot.
Yeah, and usually the takeaway that you want to have is if you're saying, you know, especially as we're going to have this conversation about the Red Wings and their picks in this draft, if you're saying, could this guy fall? The answer is probably not if they're in the top 20 to 23 of this round. He's probably not going to fall to the Red Wings, depending on where the Capitals pick falls. But you expect that's probably going to be around 27 to 29 somewhere. So, and then the Red Wings first rounder obviously being in the low 30s, maybe mid 30s at this point. So that's kind of what you're looking at. And so it does give you a nice approximation for who's realistically, trending toward being on the board. There is more time. There's still a U18 World Championship that can, you know, do some rearranging into a lot of this. But with that said, you put out kind of, you know, those little future considerations, I think, does the simulator, and you tweeted out a screen grab the other day of yours. And I told you that there was no shot that some of those names were going to be on the board where you were getting them. Oops.
And sure enough, you know, half the guys there are actually right around the slot that the FC simulator, you know, had them going with. So maybe the FC rankings are actually pretty close to Bob's rankings to allow that to happen, or it's just kind of a nice random luck with the with kind of how that simulation ended up working. But, you know, I thought, you know, at least for today, I think maybe a reasonable idea would be to talk about, you know, some of the candidates who might be in that 6 to 10 range where the Red Wings seem to be, you know, picking, and then maybe talking about who might be in that, you know, 26 to 32 range where the Capitals pick is likely to land. So I guess, Max, based off of, you know, Bob's list, it looks like half your Michigan crew is not going to be around in that 6 to 10 range. But are there any other names that jump out to you as ones to pay attention to?
Yeah, so I guess just to kind of establish why we're doing the 6 to 10, I mean, at this point, the Red Wings by points percentage come up fifth from the bottom in the NHL. And so the because it is an expansion draft year, Seattle is going to get the third best odds. So really, they have the sixth best odds as things stand. They can drop up to two spots. As currently positioned, their most likely outcome would be to pick seventh, and there would be a 42% chance of that. There would be a 34% chance that they would pick sixth, an 8.5% chance they would pick eighth, a 7.5% chance to pick first, and a 7.8% chance to pick second. So that is how that shakes out for them. And given those numbers, we should pretty strongly, you know, project at this moment in time, although the season's not over, that they could actually go lower if they beat up on Columbus in these few games coming up here. We should project sixth or seventh as we're starting to kind of really get into the prep work, which I know a lot of people are probably not going to be too happy to hear.
I mean, the Red Wings tend to pick sixth every single year, right? Why should this year be any different? But, you know, you're absolutely right, Max. And I think, honestly, the key is going to be this Columbus series, because Columbus has absolutely fallen off a cliff. You know, a lot of people had maybe pegged them to contend for the playoffs. Now, feasibly, Detroit can pass them in terms of standing positions and actually end up seventh in the division, which was something that we didn't think was going to be possible, particularly at the beginning of the season. And so, you know, if Detroit ends up passing Columbus, that's a couple more spots that they can drop. And so that's why, again, you kind of want to be in a scenario where you're erring on the side of caution and not saying, all right, let's look at the top five guys and just expect them to slide here. I think you're probably safer entering with maybe the 6 to 10 group on your board, given how Detroit's playing, the games they've got remaining, and what the most likely pick's going to be.
Yes. So to me, I know that there's a kind of an opinion out here that this is a not a draft that it's hugely important to be picking in the top four or five in. I don't really agree with that. I think it's the kind of draft that the difference between picking like third or fourth and first or second isn't that great, but I still think there is kind of a tier cutoff just based on what I know. And I am not Corey Pronman. I am not Scott Wheeler. I do not have that, you know, on the firmest of confidence, but you know, if it were me, I would want to be probably picking no later than third. Obviously that's probably not happening for the Red Wings here unless they win the lottery. So it's probably not happening. So to me, like the three that I would be targeting above the others would be Owen Power, Matt Beniers, and Dylan Guenther. And then slightly beyond that, I think you would get into Luke Hughes, William Eklund, Kent Johnson, and Brant Clark. When you get toward the back half of that next tier, that's where it gets pretty interesting to me. That's where the Red Wings are probably going to be picking. Simon Edvinsson, the Swedish defenseman out of Frölunda, and we cannot discount the Frölunda ties at this point with how many the Red Wings have taken out of there in the last couple of drafts. He was actually at number three on Bob McKenzie's list. Tied for second, or was he three?
Tied for second on the official publicly posted list, but I think if you watch the show, they listed him third.
Okay, so that was a surprise entry into that top group of seven or eight there for me. And I probably need to know more about Simon Edvinsson. I haven't been able to watch a ton of him. But you know, he is obviously a couple of things that teams really like is a big, skilled, mobile defenseman.
Yeah. I mean, he's a 6'4" defenseman who, you know, has really all the tools you would want in a defenseman, you know, very skilled, good skater, relatively mobile, very, very willing to join the rush. You know, I think maybe the biggest knock on him right now is he's a little too much of do-it-yourself kind of deals and can skate himself into trouble, or he can kind of stick handle the puck into dangerous areas, force coverage behind him. I think a little bit of work will have to be done on his decision-making and kind of picking his spots a little bit better while making sure you don't necessarily lose that kind of drive to join the rush. But ultimately, you don't find a lot of really strong 6'4" skaters that have solid puck handling skills. You know, it was a big reason why the Wings swung on William Wallander last year was he had a lot of those same kind of tools, but definitely needed work on his defensive zone coverage. And I think Edvinson's maybe a little bit better version of that. So it's probably still a little bit more of a project, but definitely has all the tools you want.
To me, the names that jump out, if the Red Wings are indeed picking 6, 7, or 8, are Eklund, Johnson, and Brant Clark. And if Luke Hughes is still there, add him to the mix. But I would think he probably doesn't get out of the top five with his skating. Brant Clark is kind of the next defenseman. I know this has been kind of, for a lot of people, the defenseman draft, and certainly seeing four defensemen in McKenzie's top six reinforces that. Clark is the player who is listed at number six, and so I think you could make a best player available argument on that front. He's kind of, he's the defenseman that you're going to like to watch. He makes nice plays with the puck. He's not the prettiest skater, but in terms of like a future power play quarterback, I mean, he's probably your guy if that's the thing you want out of this draft. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great kind of summary of Brant Clark. Is he's just a guy who I think makes good decisions with the puck. And, you know, this year has been really, really odd because a lot of people were expecting to be able to see him play in the Ontario Hockey League. Obviously, they never got off the ground. So then he jumps, you know, across the Atlantic, heads over to Slovakia, which is a league that's just not watched, I should say, maybe as much as others publicly speaking. And so, you know, he maybe has flown a little bit under the radar, but if you kind of dig into the numbers for him over in Slovakia, I mean, he's played, you know, nearly 20 minutes a night. He's played power play minutes for them. And he's played on a pretty poor team. You know, I was digging into some of their even strength numbers, and that the team he plays on over in Slovakia had a even strength goals for percentage of 39%, whereas Brant Clark was actually sitting up at 57%. And so when you subtract Clark's numbers actually from the team numbers, he basically ends up plus 20% relative to his team. So he's certainly a guy that's having a great impact at even strength, you know, for a team that's not that talented, not that good. So I think you have to be somewhat excited about what he's able to do in a pro league right now.
Absolutely. And that's something the Red Wings have seen in Moritz Seider, is that, you know, good performance at a young age in pro leagues tends to be a really promising sign. Lucas Raymond, good performance as a young player in pro leagues, promising sign. And you got some boom potential there too with Brant Clark. So that's certainly a name that would be very high at that point on the board for me, at least. Kent Johnson, supremely skilled player for Michigan. I think most of you probably are familiar enough with Kent Johnson because those Michigan guys are some of the only ones who have gotten a full season in. Obviously they're playing right up the road. No one could actually get into Yost really to see them. I got in there one time to see them, and they are all very fun to watch. I mean, you've heard us probably talk about Beniers a little more. I think he's the true center of that group. But Kent has real upside. I mean, the skill is, really impressive.
Yeah. I think a lot of people kind of equate him maybe to a Trevor Zegras type, not necessarily the same, level of skill, but similar kind of playmaking player, you know, a Patrick Kane-esque type player. I don't think he comes anywhere near the ceiling of either of those guys, but definitely a high upside player if he can put all the tools together, if he can continue to find those soft areas of ice, if he can continue to make those plays at the next level. I think he's a guy with a lot of upside for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it tells you something that, you know, we really liked Beniers, and we're talking about him as a potential and maybe an arguably should be top three pick here. Kent Johnson slightly outscored him this year.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to maybe Beniers' game being a little bit better rounded. Beniers kind of projecting to be a center at the next level, whereas Johnson, even though played center, is likely going to be a winger at the next level. I don't think he'll be able to stick at center. But so that just kind of goes to show you you know, some of the differences between those two guys out of Michigan.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And then there's William Eklund, who I think people are probably pretty familiar with just because Red Wings fans have been tuning in frequently to the SHL, or at least very aware of what's going on in the SHL. William Eklund scored at a comparable level to Lucas Raymond this year, despite being one draft class behind. So if we're going to talk about Lucas Raymond as one of the better forward prospects outside the NHL, I think it's only fair that William Eklund be in that same conversation.
Yeah, I mean, William Eklund, you know, I was a little surprised to see him sit here at 7, and I think he may end up being one of the more difficult players to assess for a lot of these scouting organizations. You know, Bobby Max got him here at 7. I mean, Elite Prospects has him at 1. McKean's has him at 10. It's kind of all over the place. But I think if you're looking at Eklund, he's an extraordinarily smart hockey player who really plays kind of all parts of the game well. I think if you're looking for a guy who has the highest potential at being, you know, the highest level of player or highest level of forward in this draft, he's right there with Dylan Guenther, in my opinion. I think he's arguably, you know, the most talented player. He's a two-way threat, excellent protection with the puck, you know, great work ethic. I think he would complement a guy like Lucas Raymond perfectly. You know, there, I think maybe the knock that tends to be really on all these guys is, you know, having some question marks about his skating. But at the end of the day, I think he's an outstanding player. Maybe he slips a little bit because he is a shade under 5'10". You know, maybe he slips a little bit because even though he can play center, maybe there's a debate about whether he's going to be a winger or a center. I think a lot of people are thinking maybe winger at this point, but nonetheless, I think he's an extraordinarily talented hockey player.
Yeah, and one that I think you would do well to pick. Like, the team that gets him, I don't think it has to be too worried about bust potential, given what he's already proven at the pro level. I mean, to me, that's like that. There's a degree of safety and comfort there, and yet it also implies real ceiling to have produced at that level already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, if you're trying to contrast his counting stats to what you saw from like Lucas Raymond last year, I think take note that William Eklund got lot more minutes than Lucas Raymond got last season. You know, he's playing close to 16 minutes a night while Raymond was maybe about 10 minutes a night in his draft year. So certainly the counting stats are going to look much better. But I mean, to be a U18 player in the SHL scoring as well as he did at even strength is very, very impressive and something not a lot of guys have really done. So to me, he's definitely an attractive player for the Red Wings if he's there at 7.
But even if you take that out, if you take out the, you know, Lucas Raymond's ice time difference in his draft year compared to Eklund, like, they're playing about the same amount of minutes this year, and Eklund's a little bit younger. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Eklund's certainly a little younger. I think importantly, you know, we should give the caveat that Frölunda is a very low scoring hockey team, similar to Detroit. And so again, you're just not going to have a lot of points that go around because the team doesn't score that much. But whereas Eklund's playing on Djurgården, and I think he played with Holtz at times.
Yes.
So you're going to get some more points in playing a little bit more of an up-tempo pace there. But either way, again, very impressive to see this from Eklund. He's been consistent throughout the whole season. You know, so I personally think he's a top three talent in the draft and arguably the safest bet to be a top six forward in the draft, albeit there are guys with maybe a little bit higher ceiling like Dylan Guenther.
Yeah, and I would put Owen Power is another guy who I think combines ceiling and upside really well. Like, I think the floor of a guy who is that size, can move that way, has put up the points that he already has at the NCAA level is really impressive. It's why I agree with him being ranked number one. I also think there is tremendous ceiling because of the toolkit there that like he to, that to me is justifies the number one ranking is the blend of ceiling and floor for him. And that what is what amazes me about Owen Power. But I agree, like if you get to the 5, 6, 7 spot in this draft and you want to know that you're getting someone who's probably going to project to play in the top half of your lineup someday, you know, Willie Mecklin might be your guy.
Yeah. And so that's where, again, not a bad consolation prize. I think it's important to temper, you know, your expectations to a certain degree in that, you know, maybe most likely scenario is maybe a second line winger, you know, third line winger that you get out of this, but definitely has the, you should feel relatively comfortable knowing that he should hit at least that with potentially some more upside.
Yeah, I mean, none of these guys are guarantees to be top half of the lineup players. That is the great acceptance that we all have to come to is that even a great high pick, even a pretty good top 10 pick is not a guarantee to be a top line or even top half of the lineup player. It's just the way that historically that's worked out.
Yeah, and again, we've talked about it time and time again, the talent, the overall ceiling of this talent of the talent level of this class is, you know, a fair bit lower than where we were last year. I think, you know,
can I debate you on that?
You can.
It's not that I want to debate. I mean, the top end for sure. Like Lafreniere, Byfield, Stützle are going one in this class. All three of them are. But like, do you really think that these guys wouldn't challenge or pass like Raymond, Sanderson, Drysdale at you know in that 4-5 range at you know pretty consistently?
I don't. Like I said, I think if I were drafting this group against the 2020 class, you know, if I'm looking at the top center, Matty Beniers right now, is he better than Anton Lundell was last year?
I think so.
I don't. I think it's actually, or at the very least, you're having a solid debate about it, right? I think he's head and shoulders better than Anton Lundell, and especially with what we've seen Lundell do this season. You know, last year, remember, he had the ACL injury or
but
the knee
injury.
We didn't
see that at the time of the draft. Like, there are always going to be guys that pop in the year after that. You know what I mean? I'm saying, like, what I thought of Lindell before the draft last year, and maybe I was wrong about him, but, like, you know, I think you can argue Lindell should have gone higher, of course. But, like, I think you have to evaluate the draft class as what you thought of him at the time of the draft.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I think the downside to Lindell was people missed a large chunk of his season. They missed him at the World Juniors because of that knee injury. So you didn't get to see a lot of the stuff. But, you know, even then, if you're just taking Matty Beniers as the top center in this draft, is he better than Quentin Byfield? No. Is he better than Marco Rossi? No. Is he better than Cole Perfetti?
I think he's better than Rossi.
Oh, man. We're going to have to throw down over here. It's not even close, man. But, okay, so maybe if you're – I think you got to take your U of M glasses off, Max.
Well, let's not talk about him. You're focusing on the center. Like, Dylan Guenther is the top winger in this draft.
Yeah.
I mean, he's at least comparable to Raymond, Holtz. I forget who else went high. Perfetti. At least comparable to those guys.
I personally don't see it there. I think the first winger you're talking about him being comparable to comes after Alex Holtz. Because, again, I mean, remember back to last season, the conversations we were having about Holtz. We said if you dropped him in the CHL, he would score 70. I mean, that's what we were talking about with Holtz, because that's how good of a sniper he is. Raymond is just a supremely talented player on an offensively strapped team, and he played 10 minutes a night. So you didn't, again, get the counting totals that you're getting from Dylan Guenther playing 23 minutes a night for the WHL's best team with the Edmonton Oil Kings. I think there's a huge difference in that context there that definitely makes this a challenging comparison. But to me, there's no question about it. The first winger I'm comparing Guenther to is Jack Quinn in terms of order off the board. Like, I have Stützle, Lafreniere, Raymond, and Holtz all well ahead of Guenther, at least evaluating up to right now.
Okay. And then on the defensive end, Owen Power versus Sanderson and Drysdale, the first two defensemen taken, I think I'm taking Owen Power over them.
I think that's a reasonable – I think this is a more reasonable conversation here, because neither Drysdale or Sanderson truly blew me away. I do think
– and you thought they were picked a little high too at the time.
I also thought they were picked a little high, partly due to the position they play and not really them, you know, at all. It's mostly just that position is so difficult to project. But already you're seeing Jamie Drysdale playing for the Anaheim Ducks, right? I mean, he's getting minutes in his D, you know, first year out, D plus 1 year. So – you know, maybe he's a better player than we thought. And he had a lot of the tools. He was a great skater, great power play quarterback. So I think at the very least, you're saying Owen Power's on the same level as him. I could hear the argument for Power being better than him. I wasn't a huge fan of Sanderson at all last season. I think at this point, I'll still kind of maintain I'd like to see more from him before I can feel confident in that pick at five. But yeah, I think the defenseman is where you can make that argument. But from a forward talent standpoint, I still think you're dropping into the teens here if you were to drop those forwards there.
It's a good point about the trying to, you know, place the scoring of Raymond and Holtz into the junior leagues. And it's something I probably need to remember to do more often. I'm not certainly not doubting that like a Marco Rossi would score more than I think Matt Beniers would score. I just think, you know, and Rossi had a complete game. I'm not going to dispute that. I think maybe I'm a little more positive that Beniers sticks at center, and maybe that's influencing things a little bit for me. I'm, you know, maybe a little more confident in how he's going to hold up, you know, translating his game. But, you know, I think reasonable minds could disagree on that one. I'm not going to come down so hard line. It's just like I would, if you could give me the choice right now, if I could add one of them to my farm system and my mythical hockey team, I think I would lean toward Beniers, but I might be wrong in doing that. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, this is all academic to the sense, like, I can't say I'm right and I can't say you're wrong. Yeah. I think, you know, from my opinion, based on just everything I had looked at last year and everything I've looked at this year thus far, I do have a hard time placing the forward crop in particular ahead of the for any really a lot any of the guys that went in the top 10 last year. That's the challenge.
It's just to me, like, when I look at the body of, you know, those that top tier of six or seven, to me, if we grant that, yes, Lafreniere, Stutzel, Byfield, 1, 2, 3 over both of them. But if I compare, you know, kind of 1 through 7 this year to 4 through 8 or 4 through 9 last year, I think you can have some good debates. And it's why I think, you know, it's why I think it's a little, you know, more, it's more of a conversation than maybe I had, maybe I felt like people were kind of giving it credit for. But I don't know. I might be wrong about it.
I think, I mean, it's absolutely worth having the discussion. You know, I think one of the areas that maybe we can do to kind of help out in thinking about this is if you just start with, you know, Corey's tiers, right? So Corey last year, he always puts the prospects in a tier. So if you go back and you look at the 2020 draft, he's got Lafreniere in his own bucket as special NHL prospect. Then he's got Byfield in special / elite. Then he's got Stutzla in elite / high end, yeah, Raymond in elite / high end, Perfetti in elite / high end, Holtz in high end, Drysdale in high end, Askarov in high end, Rossi in high end.
So high and end then, translates to first line. So what? How many? Where does he start? I think Genther's probably high end.
So he's got then he has a high end / very good bubble of
that's
this,
first line / second line,
and that's Connor Zeri, and that's where he starts there, and that's at 10. And all so right. He's got 9 guys ranked at least tier wise.
It's definitely a better draft. That was a better draft. Yeah. I'm not disputing that. But okay, that is a pretty good illustration.
I that's at least what helps me is if you just project out the tiers, and maybe Corey lays it out probably better than other people do. But just using those tiers can give you some idea about where maybe these guys would slot in prior drafts. And again, that discussion is all for academic purposes because you're never combining these two drafts, and you're always going to have some sort of bias in favor of the previous draft, given that you have more information on those guys relative to the current draft. But all that being said, I'm not as high on this forward crop compared to last year's. I do think they slot a little bit lower from a ceiling perspective, but it's a fun discussion to have, I think.
Yeah, definitely. If I gave you the 6th pick and put you on the spot and I told you off the board are Power, Hughes, Beniers, Genther, and Eklund. Who are you taking?
This is where you're going to make me break all my principles and have to draft Brent Clark at 6 after I just said that I don't like taking defensemen, you know, as high here. But if you're taking Power, Genther, Beniers, Hughes, and Eklund off the board, I think now at this point, if you use Bob's list, you're working with, you know, Brent Clark at 6. You've got Edvinson at you know, tied for 2nd. Again, for the reasons mentioned previously, I think he's a little bit more of a project and someone I'm not as confident on. I'd rather swing on a guy like Brant Clark, who's showing to be relatively competent in a solid men's league and playing quite well. You know, Kent Johnson, Chaz Lucius, those are guys you can think about. Fabian Lysell is another guy that I would think about, although, you know, as a winger who has struggled in two different scenarios here, you may have a little bit more reservations, even though all the talent is there to do the things. So that's why I probably lean Brant Clark.
Would it give you even a moment of pause to draft another right shot defenseman there when arguably the two best defensemen, I mean, I would say the two best defensemen the Red Wings have in the system right now play on the right side in Seider and Hronek?
It would absolutely not give me a moment of pause. I do not believe in drafting for positional need or handedness because, you know, you can make the argument that the Red Wings' best move would be to trade Filip Hronek. Similar, follow the same line as Anthony Mantha. You bring a Brant Clark in and you hope Antti Tuomisto works out, or and you deal Hronek and deal with that problem later. But to me, there's no issue here. You can have an embarrassment of riches. Like, you look at Colorado right now, that entire D-Corps should win the Norris. And they still have guys that aren't even slotting into the lineup. And that's because at the time of the draft, you have no guarantee that someone's going to pan out the way that they do. You know, I don't think anyone thought Seider was going to go the way that he did. I don't think anyone thought Filip Hronek coming from the second round was going to go the way that he did. And same thing, you know, you can take Brant Clark here at six, hopeful that it goes the way you want it to, but you can't have that level of confidence, in my opinion, that everything's going to swing in your favor.
I am also of the mind that playing Filip Hronek on his offside would not be a problem. I mean, one of his best assets is his one-timer, and you're putting him full-time on his one-timer side. That, to me, does not seem like a bad thing.
I mean, to be fair, I don't want him shooting the puck any more than he already does.
He's had a lot of shin pads this year. There's no doubt about it.
I do not want to invite that. But, I mean, you know, again, the whole thing
about defensemen. He has a good shot. It is a good shot. I mean, he does not get it through enough.
That's right. He doesn't get it through enough, and he takes too many of them from low danger situations for my liking. But, you know, I digress. The whole point about not playing guys on their off swing, I think, sometimes gets a little bit overstated. Now, obviously, for defensemen, there is the added advantage of being on your strong side to keep pucks in at the blue line, be able to knock down passes when, you know, forwards are trying to chip the puck in past you. But there are plenty of examples of defensemen who have been able to play very well on their offside, and asking Filip Hronek to be the guy to flip over, I don't think would be a bad thing.
Yeah. All right. I don't think I disagree with you about Brant Clark. I think, you know, the combination there of what he's proven in a pro league, what the kind of skill set suggests about what he could become, I think that that's that blends, you know, upside and what you've already seen against men pretty well in a way that I think that should give you pretty good confidence in a pick like that.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about potentially his biggest holdup being skating. You know, get him in with a skating coach, make that a part of his development plan, and you're potentially swinging on a guy who has top two upside if you can get if all the breaks fall your way. Now, you don't want to think like that, but he's also got arguably the second highest floor for a defenseman behind power.
Kenzie had him listed at 6'2". That's the biggest I've seen him listed at, too. I think that's can only make you feel better.
Yeah, 6'2", 185, which should make you feel pretty good about, you know, taking a guy like that.
Luke Hughes, also 6'2". He skates beautifully. And I think you got a lot of room for upside there. But I think I took him off the board when I asked you to pick. So
You did. You unfortunately made him the last one off the board there.
All right, there you go. All right, anything else on kind of this range of picks before we move into the Capitals pick?
No, I think I'll just go ahead and state it. Do not spend your pick on Jesper Wallstedt, in my opinion. I think there's too many reasonable forwards and defensemen here to take a swing on a guy like Wallstedt. As good as he is, as good as the mechanics are, he's still going to be some time away. He's cooled off after that really, really hot start. And I think there's going to be some options later in the draft.
Did you have a selfie cam on when you saw two goalies in the top 15 of this list?
I did not. You know, I actually opened this list at work and saw it, and I had maybe a little skip of a heartbeat there, but
good place to have it at a hospital.
Right. I mean, I'm in the cardiac intensive care unit. That's the best place to probably have that happen, but we quickly moved past it.
All right. That's good. All right. So let's move in right now where the Capitals odds would leave them is really late. They have been playing well of late, so that is the 29th pick. I think it would actually be the 28th selection because you got to factor in the forfeited Coyotes pick. So if we take, you know, we'll grant you from like 24 on, just to account for the like 5 pick variance that we talked about there. So I'll give you anyone from Francesco Pinelli on in this list. Give me 2 or 3 names that you would really be closely eyeing at let's say somewhere between 24 and 31.
Yeah, I mean, taking a look through Bob's list, I think the 2 names that jump out to me are, again, some Swedes. The first one is Oscar Olsson. He's a right winger. If you want to watch someone skate, watch Olsson skate. This guy is an absolute machine. He can fly up and down the ice. I mean, he'd be a lot of fun to have, you know, playing in Detroit. I do think sometimes he has potential to skate himself into issues, or he can sometimes overcommit, but you can't deny that this kid's a really, really talented winger and a guy that the Wings simply don't have. I mean, if you look at right wing for Detroit, they could very much use a couple of guys here. So I would love to see him as a potential pick. And then the other guy you have to look at is Simon Robertson. And Simon, you know, similar to Olsson, he's another outstanding winger that Detroit would do well to be able to land. I think he's got a lot of high IQ qualities about him. He's a bit all over the board. He's got a great shot. You know, his great work ethic. Just can't say enough good things about him. You know, the other nice thing that works in his favor is he's a later birthday and a February 03 birthday. So potentially a little bit more development to come there. But either of those two, are the names that jump out to me at in that range.
There's a lot of people who, this is a player who I haven't watched, but there's a lot of people online who talk about this Brennan Othman, who I think played for Flint in the OHL. Now he's in Switzerland. Is he on your radar at all?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that I don't think would last to this spot. I mean, okay. Othman is I think I've seen some people have him as high as 18 in their mocks. Other people have been a little bit lower on him. You know, for example, I don't think Corey had him in his most recent top 33 or 34 that he ranked. So, you know, potentially there is a little bit of a jury is out here. But I think, again, another supremely talented player that the Wings would be able to land here. I don't know if he's going to be there, though. I think I would be surprised if he does last this long.
Mackie Samuskevich from the Chicago Steel in the USHL, a player I saw at the All-America game a couple weeks back, had a really good game, really skilled player. Is he someone who you would consider?
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that you absolutely should consider here. He's, you know, I guess Max, in your favor, is committed to Michigan for next season. So
that's right. That's all I care about.
That, I mean, that's what it seems to be you're picking on here. But yeah, I mean, a point per game player for the Chicago Steel. I think it's important to remember Chicago is an excellent development team in the USHL. They do a lot of things really, really well. You know, we remember that their team at last year was absolutely loaded. They had a lot of guys drafted from there. You know, Brendan Brisson was drafted from there. Sean Farrell was drafted from there. You know, that team this year is going to have a lot more guys drafted with Matthew Coronato, Ryan Ufko, Samuskevich. And then in the coming years, Adam Fantilli is going to be a name you want to know. He's going to be a top 5 pick.
Where's he going?
I think Adam Fantilli. He's not not this season. He's not going to be a top 5 pick. I think it's 2023.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. He's a 2023 pick. He's only 16 right now, and he's the 5th leading scorer on that team. So, but he'll be a top 5 pick in 2023 for sure. So count on that. But that's basically all is to say that's a very loaded hockey team with a lot of good hockey players. And so I would have no qualms about taking you know, Samuskevich from that team there.
Does the fact that there are so many good players, though, change how you look at those points in the USHL?
I don't think so. I think, you know, there's certainly maybe potential where if that's a really high-scoring hockey team, then you're worried that they're getting a lot of, you know, empty points, secondary assists, things like that. The habits that they learn, though, I think is what's important for me. Mm. Get the opportunity to play around other very talented players, I think, is helpful in their draft year. You know, relative to some other leagues where there may be huge talent gaps between the guys playing on the first and second line and the guys playing on the third and fourth line. I think you look at that Chicago Steel team. And I mean, they're starting to build a dynasty over there. They were 41-7 last year, I think 36-11 this year. Really, really developing good hockey players. Plus, I trust their development program with some of the guys that we've seen come out of there in the last couple of years.
All right. And then since we don't, you know, overload things, players who attend or are committed to my alma mater, if you wanted to spotlight any University of North Carolina men's hockey players, you know, feel free.
I think if you go back and you look up the 08-09 roster, you might find me there on, in net. So, you know, maybe if that even still exists at some point, I think I got to play a game or two. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, UNC ice hockey got canceled there. But, you know, Max, going back to my Chicago Steel point, right? Owen Powers is a Chicago Steel alumnus.
He is.
You know,
that's
these
true.
These are all guys that Chicago has developed and they do a really nice job. So
where would draft analyst Prashanth draft goalie Prashanth?
Oh, no. This would be undrafted. You'd be signing me. Yeah, no. We'd have a contract after the draft. You would not want to waste draft capital here.
All right. Fair enough. I'm not going to go through each pick in the second round. Give me three names in the second round ranked between, 30, 33 and 64 on the McKenzie list that you wouldn't mind seeing the Red Wings target. Ideally, not all clustered at the top.
All right. So then I'll give you a defenseman at the top that I really, really like, Scott Morrow. He's in the U.S. high school system playing for St. Mary's. I think if there's any guy who gets drafted in the second round, or I should say any defenseman who gets drafted in the second round that has legit top four potential, it's Scott Morrow. I think he has all the tools. He's just going to need some time and development. He's already committed to University of North Dakota, which is, again, a great development school in the NCAA. So I think he'll learn a lot of great habits there. He's a guy that I absolutely would love to see the Red Wings be able to take in with kind of their first second round pick. I think a forward that would be very interesting to see would potentially be Ayrton Martino. So he's in the USHL as well in Omaha. I have heard him basically likened to an offensive dynamo. So there are still some, you know, defensive deficiencies to work out here. But, you know, kind of taking a swing on talent there, I think, would not be the worst thing in the world. The other guy you can consider would be Prokhor Poltepov, who's down there at 62. Again, there's a very wide range of opinions on him. I think Corey had Poltepov at like 20 or 22 in his rankings. You know, plays with great pace, great energy. So if you're getting him down towards the end of the second or the early third, I think that's a heck of a pick. And then, you know, last but not least is Kirill Kirsanov, who, again, another outstanding hockey player. I think that Bob has him at 64, defenseman in the KHL. Kind of flew under the radar until the World Juniors, where he then sort of outshined Daniil Chayka, who was expected to kind of be the darling for the Russian team. And Kirsanov didn't look out of place in any situation, contributed at all levels of the game. So again, being able to pick up a guy like him, you know, late second, early third is a great spot for Detroit.
Yeah. All right. Any more thoughts on this? I'm sure we'll be referencing back to it and talking about it a ton in the coming months. But before we pivot off of this, any final thoughts?
No, I think it'll be a really interesting draft. It'll be really interesting to see how this holds up. I think for what it's worth, everything that we talked about in the second round, as accurate as I said Bob is in the first round, last year's second round was his biggest miss of a second round, going back to as many of these as I could find. I think I go back to 2014. So his second and third rounds missed on a lot of different guys. So it could be far more wide open than we see listed here.
Okay, good to know. All right, today is April 19th. Any memories from April 19th through the years you can think of?
I think this was the day the franchise savior returned, if I remember correctly. Is that how we're going to refer to him? I think that's how we should refer to him.
You are welcome to do that if that is how you would like to do it. But yes, it is the day Steve Yzerman became the Red Wings GM. 2-year anniversary. Wanted to get your thoughts 2 years in on the Yzerman tenure. Has the timeline changed from what you expected? I got some pushback. I did not expect to get pushback for saying that I thought the timeline had changed. I guess there are some people who think that they should have seen all of this coming 2 years ago. Has the timeline changed in your mind for the Red Wings returning to contention? And what are kind of some highs and lows of of the Yzerman era so far.
I think the timeline is maybe pushed out maybe a year or two further than I was anticipating. And I think that's really signaled by the Anthony Mantha deal. And it'll really be signaled depending on what he chooses to do this offseason. If he, you know, decides to part with Tyler Bertuzzi and or Jacob Vrana and or Filip Hronek or, you know, a number of other guys, I think that'll maybe really signal what direction the team's heading in. But I think it's maybe been pushed out a year or two. So now you're looking at probably 24, 25 as being kind of that realistic shot to get back into the playoffs. But, you know, in terms of evaluating his tenure, I think it's gone exactly like someone who understands that this is going to be a long process. I need to be able to maintain a lot of options. I need to maintain cap flexibility. And I need to recognize when things are not going as quickly as I thought they would and learn how to kind of reset my timeline. Which he has done beautifully thus far. I think he's done an outstanding job in the first 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about kind of highs and lows of it, I think the lows are pretty manageable lows. I mean, like a couple of trades here that I think you can point to and say, not crazy value. We'll see what comes of the John Merrill deal. That one stands out. The Alec Regula deal for Brendan Pelini, certainly understood the idea at the time, but it could very well be that Alec Regula ends up playing more NHL games than Brendan Perlini did for the Red Wings. That's certainly possible. So, but to me, when those are the most questionable moves, that does signal a pretty successful 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, coming into this season and really going up to the trade deadline, you might have argued that the most questionable move was either the Alec Regula deal or even the Adam Ernie deal, right? Because I think a lot of people were a little skeptical giving up I think it was a fourth round pick for Adam Ernie, who then didn't really have that great of a 19-20 season until now all of a sudden he is the goal scorer who cannot be stopped until Chicago finally snapped his 8-game point streak. But yeah, I mean, the lows are not really that low. I mean, sure, you can argue that John Merrill should have netted more value. I certainly believe so. I think that's going to be Yzerman's worst move of his tenure. You know, maybe Alec Regula, Chicago Steel alumnus, let me just throw that in there, finds a way to maybe make Yzerman regret dealing him for Perlini, but it, with the information you had at the time, not really a deal you can argue against. So overall, he's done a good job of minimizing the damage that his moves can actually cause, which I think is really, really key here.
To me, I think the best moves, the Andreas Athanasiou one really comes to mind. I think to get 2 second round picks for a guy who the Oilers then non-tendered in the offseason. I think you can honestly probably look at the Adam Ernie trade is starting to get to be one of the better. I mean, to get your current leading goal scorer for a fourth round pick, he's age 25. That move might be in the top five so far. It hasn't been a ton of splash, I guess you would say. I mean, I think the Mantha trade was super splashy, super bold. To me, I think that is kind of like good value more than like unreal in the Athanasiou sense, but certainly there were enough people in the hockey media who disagree with me about that. So I could be off base on that front.
Yeah. I mean, right or wrong, I think what you're seeing though is the willingness to make the moves to reset to basically fit his timeline that he envisions. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Athanasiou, I think at the time, a lot of people lamented the fact that he only got 2 seconds, right? And that's partly because we never knew that COVID was going to shut everything down.
Yes.
And that Athanasiou would then very much struggle in Edmonton to really adapt to playing on Connor McDavid's wing. And then we didn't realize Edmonton wouldn't actually keep him and qualify him. So, you know, it was... That deal ends up looking bad initially and then becoming better in hindsight. And, you know, the Mantha deal right now, I think, looks great initially and may end up looking a little worse in hindsight, but it's still going to end up being a win because he made a move that fit his timeline. And I think that willingness is what's going to allow him to ultimately turn this team into a successful team.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I think you have to maintain a willingness to look back and evaluate trades at the time they were evaluated, and that's a good point about Athanasiou. At the time of the trade, I didn't think it was a low price, but I thought it was more of like a fair price. And so maybe I should remember that a little bit as well as we talk about that as one of his better moves. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly just a move that aged better. You know, the Robbie Fabry deal looked great at the time. That's the other deal that you have to think about as maybe being the best deal is...
He's been Jacob hurt. I just forgot about him.
Yeah, I mean, Jacob De La Rose isn't even on the St. Louis Blues anymore. I think he's on the taxi squad right now. You know, so that's probably the best move, hands down. But either way, he's made a number of successful moves that fit his timeline. He's got the right core age of players, I should say. He's got enormous amounts of cap flexibility, $50 million this offseason, $70 million the year after. He's got 11 picks in the first five rounds this year. He's working his way to 11 picks in five rounds next year. I think you have to like all of the aspects that he's been able to tackle to give himself the best opportunity to build a contender. I mean, it's kind of a joke where it's like you're basically throwing a Harvey Dent quote in here. You have to make your own luck. And so Yzerman is making his own luck by giving himself as many pinballs in the draft, allowing himself to have that cap flexibility so he can take advantage of that luck, and not locking himself into any sort of bad deals. I mean, arguably the worst deal, maybe we can say this now, is the Valtteri Filppula signing. I mean, Filppula has been sitting on the taxi squad this year, and even that's not that bad of a deal. Like, it was 2 years, $3 million a year, and it's not going to end up being the end of the world as, you know, the taxi squad allowed that to work out. So
I also maintain their center depth without Filppula last year would have been an unmitigated disaster.
And he was serviceable last season.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing, is like, as it transitioned to this season, maybe the second year was too long. But again, his bad moves don't hurt the team long term. I think that's the difference right now between what we saw previously. And yes, they had a different direction previously, but the Justin Abdelkader deal is going to hurt the Red Wings through 2026. That's a deal that's going to span more than a decade in terms of the amount of problems that's going to cause for the Red Wings. You know, the Steven Weiss deal is only just ending this year. Like, those are the bads that continue to hurt. Franz Nielsen's deal, technically, he's still got another year next year. That's a deal, and that's at $5.25 million. So he's done a nice job of making sure his mistakes aren't lasting mistakes, which I think is the key to being able to execute a successful rebuild.
All right. Anything else today before we let everybody go and wrap up?
No, I think that's enough of the Chicago Steel plugs for me.
All right. That sounds good then. All right. Red Wings are going to play the Stars four straight games. We'll be here to recap the first two of them on Wednesday, get you set for the second two. And maybe by then we'll be a little bit closer to talking a Joe Valeno potential debut.